now back to 95.7 The Game.
You know when Cam's back and he's got his hands on the dials, everything's just smooth, man.
Our Cam's funky, bro. I love it. In the best way. Not his odor. Unlike some people that work around here.
Cam, by the way, you're not referring to me, are you? Even though I do not use deodorant.
Yeah, I know. You smell like sea salt.
Beginning to smell. You know what stinks? Are those seals. Poof! You know, you see, you know, two things that stink are a seal.
Back to seals.
Well, because, you know, these big doughy-eyed things, and like you see them in the water, and you get close to them, and they open their mouth. It's like, whoa! Little breath mint here, buddy. Well, buddy
like,
boy.
It's like my brother's dog. It's like, dude, you could brush his teeth every once in a while. He's only got three of them.
And the other thing that stinks, I haven't done this, but a friend went on a safari, and they got close to lions. They're like, man, I bet we throw you a bar of soap there, Mr. Lion. With all that blood and just, you know.
I was going to say, do people think that these animals and their hygiene is tailor-made? It's not like they're walking around thinking, oh, yeah, let me just go wash my rear parts today.
Also, Europeans have a tendency to be a little on the offensive side when it comes to hygiene. I think just collectively, yes, I'm indicting an entire And Australians. They're just, we're the cleanest country in the world. We're like sort of obsessive about the three shot. Well, I know. I mean,
have you looked outside? We're in the heart of San Francisco. God love this city. Ricky Pearsall got shot two blocks away from here, Dan.
What does that got to do with being clean?
Well, I'm just saying there's a lot of, you know, nefarious things going on
well,
in these parts.
I know, but yeah, I'm sure. Well, anyways, I'm just saying that we, aside from, you know, a select few in these parts, just generally speaking.
It all has to do with attraction.
As our country, we are obsessive about soap and cleanliness. In Europe, you take a shower once a week and you're good.
Well, my not-so-thought-out theory would just simply be because Americans are attracted to cleaner people. Europeans love that pungent, natural, kind of barbaric smell. I don't know. Maybe it's because they've been around for longer.
Europeans are a little bit more real. It's just like, you know, they don't put on the airs, but put on the dog, as they like to say. There's not, like, they pierce through typically when you're having a conversation with a European or somebody from another country. There's not a lot of, oh, it's a beautiful weather today. There's not a lot of,
well, they're generally more comfortable in their own skin.
Passive aggressive.
They aren't as material. You know, they're not as caked up. I feel like I don't see a lot of European women as much as American women wearing, you know, a lot of makeup and whatnot.
Yeah, and personality-wise,
natural.
There's not a lot of filter. You don't have to go through the passive aggressive was the word I was looking for. A lot of this should have, you know, just fluff. They're very sort of poignant. They get to the point. And so I think sort of like, you know, your hygiene and taking care of yourself, like, come on, man, really? How much makeup? How much hairspray? How many showers do we need to take? This isn't a facade. This is who I am. Like, let's stop with the puppet show.
Well, yeah, just because it has the same climate doesn't mean the Swiss Alps are like people in Minnesota.
By the way, you know what our climate is very, very similar to?
Well, it's changing quite a bit. I don't know if you noticed. It's like 90 degrees and has been this entire week.
Well, we always get the Indian summer, so this is typical.
It hasn't been this hot, I was reading, since the 80s.
Is that right?
Yeah. We're moving in the right direction.
So we're very Mediterranean-esque. Like, if you go to a Mediterranean coastal city, this is the way it feels. It's San Francisco, basically. It's just...
With more humidity, no?
Well, I wouldn't call San Francisco humid.
No, I mean like a Mediterranean region.
I mean, I don't know.
Dude, yes, you do.
You're coming at me like I'm a scientist.
Well, and they were just in Ibiza over the summer.
Throwing this stuff out there.
That touches water.
That's very similar.
No, in Rome, it was pretty humid last summer.
Yeah, well,
that was their Indian summer.
Gets crazy. All right, so if we want to get back to Buster Posey,
They're done.
Close things out. Well, here's the thing about... This is why I had some reservations about Buster Posey. So it always comes back to me in my career. I'm like one of those guys, like, back in the day. Like, I keep... What do they say? I keep the yearbook open, always talking about glory days.
Well, we still don't know how old you actually are.
So here's the thing. When I used to do shows, Ev, one of the most difficult things... You'll find this out when you're doing post-game shows, and you have to do it with former players. And I remember I should text him and get him on the line. There were a couple of players that I used to have to do it with. one of which was Kevin Gogan, who was an offensive lineman for the Dallas Cowboys, used to protect Troy Aikman. He has multiple Super Bowl rings. Local shout out, Sacred Heart High School here in San Francisco, played at the University of Washington. And so Gogs and Chad Eaton, like every fall when I was working with, not even in Seattle, but working with post-game players, we're doing a post-game show with former football players. And you have meetings, right? There are some things that you got to do where you have to come to these editorial meetings during the week because you got to work with producers, you got to work with directors, you got to know times, you know, in and out. They got to fit you for things called IFBs. And I'm telling you, these are guys, just think about it. They've done one thing their whole life. Going back to AAU, certainly in high school, and then in college where they were the best, and then in the NFL. As I like to say, you get to a point where you just, you grow accustomed to people putting food in your mouth. They open doors for you. That's your life. They've never had a job, the quote-unquote 8-to-5. And I remember dealing with these guys, and I would say, you just got to be at this meeting. And they're like, you know what? Dan, that's the most painful hour and a half, 2 hours of my week of my life. I can't sit there and listen to some producer talk about stuff I don't even care about. And I'm like, you have to be there. Otherwise, you're not going to get the gig. My news director, general manager is going to fire you. You got to be at these things. Just play the game for an hour and a half. Christ, I got to do it every day. And my point is they just could not be in that formal setting. And I would look at them while I would be at the meeting in this huge conference room, and their knees are going 100 miles an hour. They're looking at everything out the window. They can't focus because they've never, and it dawned on me, I'm like, you guys have never had to do this. You've never, ever had to do this. And I remember once Chad Eaton wanted me to fire a producer because of the way he sat. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, we can't have a guy who's sitting with his legs folded in a chair. Like, what's he doing? I'm like, that's your takeaway from the meeting? How about understanding, you know, what the producers are trying to get across from our highest rated show here? He's like, no, the guy's sitting with his legs folded. Like, come on, he can't work with
us.
He
didn't like the yogi?
Apparently. But my point in all of this is, and I don't think Buster's like this, and you pointed out there could be outliers like the Nolan Ryans of the world. Although I would say the transformation of the Rangers wasn't necessarily accredited to him. Would that be an Eric accurate?
No. Well, I was just going to say, those are examples of people that have done it. But
yeah.
There's a reason why there's only two. You know, also, he wasn't involved, from my understanding, in the day-to-day aspect of things. Like, he was a team president and probably dealt with the large, big-picture decisions. But Nolan Ryan is not helping groom Jurickson and Profar through the minors, in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly. And I just think that it's really difficult adjustment just from leaving one thing you've done your whole life as a baseball player. And now it's not just being part of the executive team, but now being the head of baseball ops. Like, man, you've just signed up for an office gig that is 10 to 14 hours a day where you're overseeing everything. Now, you can outsource and hire people, but still, it's a huge, huge undertaking. And it doesn't matter if it's Buster Posey or anybody else that you hire for that job with no life experience, just like anything else. It's a precarious hire, I think.
Well, I think it's risky. This is where I am with you, Dan, because a lot of people, whether it's been on this station, around the area, even around the country in some places, are just talking about Buster Posey taking this position, this post, like there's nothing at stake. Like this could not go wrong in any way, shape, or form. I completely disagree. While I think that Buster Posey is one of the brightest baseball minds in the country, I do think that this is risky for not just him, but also for the Giants, because you just played your ace. You just played your best hand. And if that's not good enough, then where do you go from here? So that's from the Giants' standpoint, because he is the ultimate facelift for a Farhan era that has produced one postseason in six. That's not good. But if Buster Posey doesn't produce results, I'm not really sure what card you have left to play after that. From Posey's perspective, it's risky because if it doesn't go well, I do think his legacy, in a way, is at stake, not as a player, not as a World Series champion, but as a face of Giants baseball. Chris Mullin, for example, was somebody that took over with the Golden State Warriors. I don't know if people look at him unfavorably as a player, but people don't remember that era of Warriors basketball very fondly because there was some decisions that he made that didn't work out for the Warriors. That same thing could happen with Buster Posey, and that is a possibility. So everyone walking around like there's zero risk involved in this decision, and it's 100% forward with the San Francisco Giants, I would just caution you because of the reasons you just mentioned. Lack of experience, a lack of help. And one thing that I think is going to make Posey's hiring difficult for the other positions is the fact that he occupies the one post that everybody wants. If Buster Posey was an owner or on the board, remains on the board, and is able to weigh in on who he would like to become the next baseball, you know, president of baseball ops, that's one thing. But now, anybody looking for a move or to join the Giants front office, it's GM and down. So you're going to have to hire probably an AGM from another organization. So you're not looking at the number ones or number twos and trying to pry those from other teams' front offices. You're trying to pry number three or number four execs and banking on those guys stepping in and becoming something great. I just think that's really risky, and I don't think that people are giving that enough thought, quite frankly.
Is Patella out, the current GM? I mean,
they're going to probably move him to a different spot. It sounds like he'll still be a part of the organization publicly, but privately, maybe not as much.
Because it's very different. I think that for the GM under Buster Posey, as opposed to the general manager under Farhan, because Farhan basically wore all the hats.
Well, that's the other part of it, too, is you're hiring a GM, it sounds like to me. Now, Posey might do all the day-to-day stuff. I just personally don't believe that that's what they brought him in to do. Nor is he, quite frankly, capable. Like, he doesn't have a resume to me that screams he's able to do that. And learning on the job also wouldn't give me a lot of confidence in the first year or two going very well. But that's neither here nor there. If he hires a GM to step in and do all the things that he needs, then you're hiring someone to do another man's job, basically.
Well, yeah.
Or pick up the slack. And who would want to do that unless you're paying an obscene amount of money? And even then, this is the other problem with it, too. If Posey hires a GM to take over some of the roles that we generally associate with a president of baseball ops, well, then that person is also going to take the fall. Because, at least in the short term, I don't think there's anybody that would blame Buster Posey, for example, if they didn't make the postseason next year. Or at least I wouldn't, because it's year one. But since Posey is now the face, and he is the quote-unquote savior, whoever he brings in is going to be the guy that I think is going to take all the blame if this doesn't go very well.
Oh, you're going to be the fall guy. But most GMs are. And most GMs don't obviously have the notoriety of a Buster Posey. So
well,
I think
no, usually the president, like the number one, takes the fall. Farhan takes the fall. Kyle Bloom in Boston takes the fall. Brian Cashman in New York takes the fall. But Buster Posey right now, for the first few years, his hands are clean. And I don't think there's anybody that's going to put, you know, a lot of pressure on him to basically do what Farhan couldn't.
Again, it just comes down to a guy with no experience. And I could see him being, you know, part of the Giants organization, certainly as he has been. And I didn't realize that he had, you know, as much pull as he did until I found out that he was in on those meetings with re-signing Matt Chapman. But to take over again, I got to throw the title out there because I think a lot of people are too casual about it. It's the head of baseball operations, which means you oversee everything from the minor leagues to the analytics team. Hell, you got to deal with payroll. You got to deal with the HR. You got to be Matt Nahagian, man. You know how difficult it is to do what it is that Matt does and having to. We just think of Matt Nahagian, our boss here, 95.7 The Game, as a guy. Hey, Matt, you know, let's talk about the schedule, talk about contract salaries. He's got to do that. He's got to deal with sales. He's got to deal with HR. He's got to deal with the guys upstairs. He's got to deal with Odyssey out in New York or wherever. There are so many fires that you're putting out. And everybody just sees it through their personal scope. And I think, again, when you're talking about what it is that Buster Posey has signed up to do and what the Giants have agreed to hire him to do is there's somebody that I think I asked for something that I'm regretting here. What the Giants are asking him to do is doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It's just a recipe for everything to go wrong.
look, I'm not going to rob him of the possibility that this could work. I just wonder how long that's going to take and why all of a sudden things would change. Because I do agree with you, and even Posey said it, you can't stray away from analytics. And moving into Buster Posey from Farhan Zaidi would, to me, be seen as just an anti-analytical move. Farhan's associated with it. That's what he does. He crunches numbers. Posey is probably much more of a field guy, although he has an innate understanding of what stats are important to him. Where I also think there's a disconnect is, you know, we talked about Posey helping in the boardroom and closing deals. I don't really think that's what he wants to do. I don't think he wants to build a club around free agents. His teams that created a dynasty in this city were homegrown, large in part. I think that's what he wants to do. And so either that's going to take some time, or B, it's not going to work at all. Because I think that Buster Posey is very familiar with Bryce Eldridge, probably Carson Wisenhunt, maybe Reggie Crawford, all these top flight guys from recent years. But has Buster Posey really dug into Guillermo Maldonado? Has
only you have.
He really dug into Bo Davidson? Now, maybe. These are all top 30 prospects for the Giants, but those aren't just the dudes that you're relying upon. I mean, Tyler Fitzgerald was never a top 30 prospect for the Giants, and he now might be your starting shortstop come next year. So I just wonder where Buster Posey is going to put his fingerprints, because I think he's much more of a build-from-within type of dude, but that also means that you got to be locked in 12 hours a day and you got to make all these choices.
Yeah, that ain't happening.
And I don't think he's that kind of person. I don't think he wanted to take the job and just immediately go from, you know, basically having a couple of, you know, business meetings to get Chapman in and maybe get this guy in and try and convince these players to, actually, we need you to go to Scottsdale this winter for the Fall Arizona League and tell us who you really think is going to pop next year. Like, I don't think he's doing that. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I mentioned before how I would deal with former athletes who would come and do the post-game show, and they became stars. And one of them happens to be on the line.
No
and he
way
is
in
one
hell.
Of my favorite people in the world. Let me just give the background for the people out here in San Francisco and the Bay Area.
Your boy just threw you under the bus.
He's a former Cleveland Brown. Made a name for himself with the New England Patriots. And then, of course, signed a huge free agent deal with the Seattle Seahawks. Ladies and gentlemen, say hello to the one and only Chad Eaton, who joins us from, who the hell knows, where are you these days, Chad?
Oh, Double D. How are you, brother?
What's going on, my man? How are you?
I'm doing great, doing great. I'm living in San Antonio now.
All right. Are you still coaching, by the way?
No. Done coaching. I went off-grid for 5 years. I was out in the Mojave Desert with my wife, and we bought a bunch of land, and we might as well have had about 1,000 acres because the nearest guy or neighbor to me was about 5 miles away.
So Chad Eaton is why your name came up earlier today. So this Buster Posey, I don't know if you follow the San Francisco Giants, but he's a former player, and now he's become the head of baseball operations. My point in all of this, taking a former player and making him do something where he's got like an office job. And I said, I remember a guy named Chad Eaton. We would do these post-game shows. And all he had to do was show up to these editorial meetings like once a week and sit there for an hour. And I remember he would call me and say, Dan, I can't do it. He said, you understand, I've done one thing. I've played football my entire life. I've been the best in high school, the best at the collegiate level at Washington State. I have never in my life have I had to sit in an office with a bunch of turds like you and your boys and and listen to you talk about times and producers and ins and outs. And I'll let you take the story from there. I mean, am I taking liberties here, or was that not your thought process as a former athlete now that literally had to sit in a room and come to a conventional meeting?
Well, I mean, you were right. I mean, you're right. I mean, but we also had we switched out producers, and we also had like lame duck leadership. And so when you've been around like great leadership, like with Belichick and Parcells and Pete Carroll and you know, coaches like that, like Holmgren, And you actually are engaged into the meeting and like, okay, I like this, whatever. We had that one producer that I told you this too. I go, men do not like fold their left leg underneath their body and they sit on it. And I'm like, how the hell am I supposed to take any guidance from this guy here? I'm like, holy crap. So yeah, I mean, but listen, we have to do if you and I, what they should have done is let you and I just do the show.
Yeah. Well, when you go from playing with Willie McGinnis to working with Dan DeVone, I mean, it's like.
No, we had
that
a blast.
An upgrade. Hey, that's an upgrade. I'll tell you what, Dan DeVone, man, I'll tell you something. I watch these guys on TV and things like that, and I'll talk to my wife or some of my friends. I'm like, I mean, he's money. I mean, not only is he good looking, not only is he charismatic, but this guy here, he right off the cuff. You guys know this. You guys work with him. Right off the cuff, this guy can just nail it every time.
Oh, Chad, my man, you're a beautiful person. So really quick, before we got to get to a break. So we used to work with me, you, Kevin Gogan, and there was a guy named Hugh Millen, for those of you who don't know, a former quarterback. And Hugh Millen would, I mean, he would break down his crap in the morning. This guy was like so into it. Meanwhile, Kevin Gogan was out in a van, stoned. Like, he was just had the windows up, tinted. And then Chad Eaton would be sleeping one off. I'd give him, like, we had this little office for the cameraman. And I'm like, go sit in there. And I'll never forget my director, 5 minutes to every show, going, Dan, where is everybody? I need air checks. I'm like, I'll go get him. I had to go out to the parking lot, go get Kevin. Gogan would come out of his van. It was like a scene out of Cheech and Chong.
The Mystery Machine.
There was this plume of smoke that followed him. I'm like, all right, let's go.
But you have to realize, Gogan is 6'7", 320 pounds. You're like going, I mean, he's the abominable snowman or Lurch. You're like, and now he's stone. Great. Hope he doesn't fall down.
But you know what's funny, Chad, is the reason why you were good and Gogan is that you knew television. I don't even know if you guys had watched the game. I know you watched the game, but you knew television, and we were the highest rated show, and it was because of you guys, man. You were entertaining, and you know it.
Well, it was a lot of fun, and you know what? And now that you know you're back up running, and I'm back in civilization, maybe we can get something going.
Let's do it, Chad Eaton, ladies and gentlemen. Chad, I'll hit you on a text. Thanks so much for joining us here today.
Thank you, Chad.
And let's stay in touch.
All right, we'll continue here.
I told you, man. He wanted me to get rid of this guy because he was sitting on a chair differently.
Did you put the bad signal out?
I hit because I
How'd
was like,
that happen?
I hadn't thought about Chad Eaton, so I just literally just texted him saying, "What are you doing? Hit me up." Or I said, I gave him the number. I said, call me. And so
888-957-9570. I guess the phone lines are open, ladies and gentlemen.
Speaking of which, before we get to the break, just give me Mitch really quick for 30 seconds. Mitch, we're up against it. What do you got, Mitch?
Hello?
Hey, Mitch.
Oh, sorry. You know, I'm speaking. I'm not getting my work anymore. How you guys doing? You say the Dodgers have a lot of pressure. They're all banged up. I wouldn't be surprised if it's San Diego and Kansas City. And got to watch out for tomorrow's game. I mean, Murray could be there. I think anything. He's a very exciting quarterback. But we still have a lot of offensive weapons. I like a chance. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it, Mitch.
Oh, thanks, Mitch.
I tell you what, from Chad Eaton to Mitch in Jersey, man, we have got you covered. All right, we'll be back here on 95.7 The Game. Evan Giddings and Dan DeVone. We'll talk a little Buster Posey. We'll get into baseball, but I also want to talk about, as Mitch just laid out, let's do Niners. We continue after this.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
You want to hear one of the best names in baseball?
Let's go.
Huh? One of the best names in baseball?
Well, I just told you about Guarelmi Maldonado.
Yeah, but I don't know who the hell that is. Oh.
Giants farmhand. Yeah. Come on.
All right.
Not farhand. Farmhand.
Kodai Senga. Every team needs a Kodai Senga.
Dude, all right.
I know.
No. Mets are throwing him to the wolves.
Well, what else are they going to do? That's what happens when you get stretched and... It's an opener game. He's going to go, he'll go three innings.
Well, yeah, because he hasn't pitched in like 3 months. No. Just throw 80% ghost splitters. Look, in a 5-game series, game one is certainly more important than a 7-game series. But yeah, the Mets are trying to pull something off that I just don't really see.
Is Wheeler going tonight?
Yeah. It is pretty cool that we do get division matchups in both of the, I think in, No, and three of the four ALDSs, because you got Tigers Guardians, AL Central, you get Padres Dodgers, NL West, and then Phillies Mets, AL East, NL East.
Listen, if the Yankees, and I know they're good storylines.
They're done.
If the Yankees don't go to the World Series.
They won't.
There is a highway right now. You got the Guardians, the Royals, and the Tigers standing in your way. They're a third of your payroll combined. If you don't go to the World Series this year, heads have got to roll. There are no excuses. I know people like the cute Tiger story and the Royals with their 106 win losses last year and the Guardians. You got the Astros out of the way. You got all the big boys out of the way. If you don't go to that World Series, New York Yankees, there's something to, there's going to be a price to be paid, a severe one.
We often get this reminder every time the calendar turns to October that baseball is a different sport in the playoffs. For the same reason that Aaron Judge will flame out spectacularly is the same reason that Shohei Ohtani is going to get introduced to a new brand and a new audience. We're not going to like what they see because, well, I don't really know if he's going to fall flat on his face. I just kind of hope he does because he plays for the Dodgers. But it's a different sport. Like, what you did in the regular season, Aaron Judge hitting 58 home runs or whatever it was, does not matter anymore. And I also just don't think the Yankees, they might be the best team on paper, but that doesn't matter when you get to October. So, and for whatever reason, it feels like teams that play, that have the higher seed, that get basically a week off, they're at a disadvantage. So it's almost like you being the better team through 162 actually hurts you.
You're sounding like a Dodger apologist right now.
Oh, no, I'm talking like a man who supports the Padres.
Ah. Well,
I hope the Dodgers lose. F them. Just like I hope, well, just like I hope Miami stubs their toe tonight in Berkeley.
By the way, what's the over and under that Ev makes? I'm going to say your cutoff is at 4 o'clock before you begin to taper down.
A.M.? Or
no, I'm talking about 4 o'clock this afternoon where Ev's going to need a nap. Ev, once again, just to reiterate, if you're just joining us, is saying that he's going to power through. Now, he is a young man. Keep in mind, he was up at 4 in the morning walking the dog. And then, while it was still dark out, he made his way to the University of California, the campus, and where was it at again?
Memorial Glade.
Memorial Glade for game day. So Pat McAfee and the Kirk Herbstreit, the entire crew were there. They taped from 6 to 9. He was there beginning at 4 o'clock. Obviously on the air with me from 9 to 12. He's going to go to the gym after this, and then he's going to power through right up until kickoff until 7 o'clock. I'm saying, Cam, the over and under we're setting at 5 o'clock, that he's going to need it. He's not going to make it to 5 o'clock. He's going to peter out at some point and have to crash.
Please.
But, much like a lot of kids, although you're not strewn on a lawn somewhere out in the East Bay, thankfully.
No.
You will.
Well, I mean, not
that,
yet.
That power nap of a half an hour, an hour, is going to help you, obviously, get to where it is that you want to go, which is kickoff tonight at 7:30.
Well, it's just the same way you avoid a hangover.
So you're just going to go straight through.
You just keep drinking. So I do think that I'll probably have to at some point grab a little, I don't know if I'll sleep standing up. What I'll probably do is when I get on BART at 24th Street, it's like a 35, 40-minute ride between 24th and downtown Berkeley. Perfect amount of time to knock out. And the beauty is, if I wake up in Richmond or somewhere, it's only two stops back. So, it's great.
All right. Well, I'm saying that you can't even sleep. Well, it's not fair. It's either you power through.
I'll sleep with one eye open. Does that count?
And then, what happens after the game? You're not going post-game, are you?
Well, I got to do the pregame show with Lorenzo Neal tomorrow morning.
Wow.
in Santa Clara. I think that starts at 11 a.m. right here on 95.7 The Game. But, of course, I'm going out. Especially, dude, if Cal wins tonight, are you kidding me?
All right.
I'm tearing up downtown Berkeley.
Again.
Just look for me on Telegraph.
When it comes to Cal football, get in the damn huddle. All right, Wilcox, this idea of going tempo, 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 it's over. Chip Kelly wrote the book 10 years ago. Move on. Get innovative and do something. How about getting into a huddle and just making sure you don't jump off sides? How's that?
Well, the amount of stars that are on the offensive side of the ball. And I'm not talking about star players. I mean literal stars, like two stars, three stars, four stars. Not a lot of them. I think Jaden Ott, their running back, is the only four-star that they've recruited under Justin Wilcox, or at least that they have on the offensive side of the football right now. I could be wrong about that, but may the Ottoman Empire reign for 100 years, Dan. That's really what we're looking forward to tonight.
And I like the Carlos Mendoza story. His career is never going to go beyond Cal, but I like the guy.
I keep calling him Carlos.
What's his first name?
Vincent.
No, it's not.
Vincent Mendoza for Cal?
I think he was an entourage.
You're right.
What's Mendoza's first name?
Fernando.
That's it. Fernando. Yes. Fernando.
He's a good looking kid.
He's a great kid. He's just infectious smile. I just like him. I like that kid. I just think that they got it. I watch Cal football, man. That's probably the one thing that I have a rooting interest. Because
Do you mind if I ask why?
My sisters went to school there.
Okay.
And so, you know, when you're at that young, impressionable age, like, I went to games and I was like, oh, wow. And then I just followed Pulowski and I could tell you every one of their quarterbacks going back the last 30 years. You know, I don't go all the way back to Barkowski, but, you know, Cal football is just something that, you know, I'm one of those people that deals with this pain every year. And I can tell you, watching them play, going no huddle, some teams are equipped to do that. Watch Miami. Miami's going to go no huddle today. But Miami has the athletes.
Well, they got the Heisman front runner right now.
And they go, and it's effective. Cal, it's just like, when they go that quickly, they're prone to mistakes. Either a penalty, which happens more often than not, which I thought was embarrassing against Florida State, or a turnover. So Wilcox, if you're listening, my man, there's nothing wrong with the huddle. Just slow it down. You don't have to be like everybody else. You're not cut out. You know how when you play against a team that's much better than you in basketball, you try, as they like to say, take the air out of the ball, meaning you're going to slow it down because they want to run? And back in the day in college basketball where you had no shot clock, or now it's like 45 seconds, you would burn that thing right down to the nub. That's what they need to do. You don't want to play Miami style and try and match them going no huddle for no huddle. It'll be 52-0 by half.
No. Absolutely not. Because the Cal defense, as of course you were listening to Pat McAfee earlier today on College Game Day, will let you know that this is one of the highest turnover teams in the country.
Their DBs are good.
Cal's got one of the most interceptable groups in the country. So, but by the way, speaking of Cal quarterbacks, who's your favorite California Golden Bear signal caller?
Well, I want to say Aaron Rodgers, but...
That's cheating.
Yeah, okay. I'll say Mike Pulowski.
By the way, he's only there for 2 years.
Mike Pulowski? The Polish Rifle?
Dude, you're going back to the 90s.
The 90s, yeah. Well, growing up, I mean, you're like, okay, well, it's got to be over the last 10 years?
No. I'm just saying. It's like, who you like has nothing to do with when or why he played. I mean, I'm not going to ask you to go through Chase Garbers or Davis Webb or... I don't know, one of the more recent guys. Sam Jackson V.
Well, because none of those teams were good, though.
Yeah, I mean, some of these guys were, I don't know, allergic to the forward pass, but I don't know, probably, like, my favorite quarterback when
Dave
I was a
Barr?
Youth. No, it was Zach Maynard.
Oh, the left-hander.
Yeah, he had one eye closed and one eye open for Keenan Allen. It was incredible.
That was Keenan Allen's cousin.
Yeah, exactly. So he just threw him the ball every single play. It was great. The team wasn't very good, but...
So funny to think Keenan Allen went to Cal.
Dude, they got a lot of big boys in the league. Well, they used to, at least.
Oh, no. Cal puts out guys. There's no doubt.
Yeah, but like actual legitimate NFL talents. Oh, not just guys that go to the league.
No. Stars. Like Stanford. Stars in this league.
Yeah.
Cam Hayward? No.
Cameron Jordan,
that's it.
Yeah, but, you know, Deshaun, Namdi, Keenan, you know, obviously Goff, A. Rodgers, but, you know.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. I do like the Goff story, because Goff sort of revitalized, although...
I did fall in love with the Bear Raid. That's what they started to call it.
Yeah. I was out in Sonny Dykes. I never liked Dykes. I mean, he was a good offensive mind, but the defenses were so terrible. And now it's just
talking
the opposite.
Scoring 50 points.
Now it's just the opposite. Yeah, well, he had TCU.
He's still at TCU.
Yeah, but he had TCU and playing for the national championship. What was that, like 3 years ago? Remember that?
Yeah, until they got rolled.
They got smoked.
Yeah, but...
But that, I mean, he was all offense. And now you don't have an... I mean, your offense is okay, but your defense is good. It's because you got a defensive-minded guy in Wilcox, whose father, by the way, was a linebacker here for the San Francisco 49ers. And he comes from the University of Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And now... You know, your offense is struggling a bit. And it's just, I'm telling
you. Well, they've struggled for quite some time. I mean, it really, before Mendoza, they haven't had a dude who could throw the ball, it felt like, since 2020.
And Goff was fun to watch. Even though Yeah, that the team was still, I want to say, middling in the Pac-12, but they won their they won a couple of bowl games in the Gough.
Yeah, they won a a Kraft Mac and Cheese bowl or two, a Red Box bowl. I don't know. Yeah, those teams were right in the middle. I mean, Cal hasn't been a a team that's respected on the national level in some time. They've cracked the top 25, I think, a few times, but they've never been a big boy like they were in the mid 2000s or early 2010s. I don't know, mid-2000s. But it was fun to see them get the national notice from College Game Day. It felt like from a lot of people I was talking to, even some of the Miami fans who were there, everyone's familiar with them because of social media. And I also think that there is a little political involvement with ESPN having the ACC and televising it and wanting to promote, right now, I think, their best team in Miami, who has reason to believe that they could maybe make a college football playoff run. But it's also a chance, the rest of the games, it's not like College Game Day hasn't been to the Swamp or hasn't been to, around the SEC. So it's a chance to put an area on the map that doesn't typically get a lot of love. And it was almost like they're promoting it. Like, I don't know if you remember back in the day, there used to be this slogan in Portland called Keep Portland Weird. I think they still adopt it or still have it, but it was almost like it was one of those kinds of things where it was, Berkeley is set up as like this quirky, hippie, tree-loving area, and we just want this whole show to be weird. And it was, but it was really entertaining in the process.
I think Cal football, listen, I think there could be an upset tonight. I've seen Miami play two games this year. Yes, they're good, but they're beatable. They're very beatable. Virginia Tech, I mean, it was a bad call at the end. That game against Virginia Tech with a Hail Mary, if you know what it is that I'm talking about, one of the remarkable comebacks or remarkable endings to a football game that I've seen in college football in a long, long time, and they just got railed. It should have been a Virginia Tech win. But Cam Ward, the transfer from Washington State, he's good, but he ain't all that. You'll find out tonight.
He's pretty good.
At least
he was. I watched him more at Washington State.
You mark my words. After tonight's game, you're going to say, yeah, they were good, but Cal could have beat them. Or Cal will beat them outright.
I think Cam Ward's going to be a first-round pick.
I wouldn't touch him.
Who would you touch?
I would not.
You like Shedeur, don't you?
I like Carson Beck. I like Shedeur. Travis Hunter's ridiculous. Hunter's your Heisman. That dude is nuts.
Well, Heisman might be playing at Memorial tonight. But
Cam Ward is not a... He's not a...
Okay.
I'm not... He's not... I'm a GM. There's no way I'm touching that.
This might be the only show that's going to talk college football for more than 15 minutes on the West Coast. That's at least in the Bay Area. But it's funny to me that everyone is super high on Shedeur Sanders. Dude, what do you think his teammates are going to do when he throws them under the bus when he gets to the NFL? Like, the moment where he talks about a team, let's say he gets drafted to Carolina and just gets obliterated, blindsided umpteen times a game, and walks to the podium and says, well, I mean, I had no time back there. What do you expect me to do? It's going to be like that scene in, in Longest Yard, where they're sitting in front of Adam Sandler after he throws the game, starts throwing the ball to the team. They come out the second half and just let the entire defensive line through like a turnstile.
Is that his nature? I don't know where you're going with this. Is that what he?
No. I'm just saying, like, the characteristics or qualities of a leader, to me, are not one that is going to place blame everywhere else but himself, which is also what he does, despite having the largest NIL deal in the history of the sport.
He's got a lot of holes in his game too. He's so prototypical for the way the game's played right now, with his ability to throw and run and be an athlete. But he needs a lot of work. His teammate, Travis Hunter, I don't know what he's going to play, whether he's a wideout or he's going to be a DB, but that dude is a crazy, crazy skilled athlete. All right, well, let's get into let's do a little Warriors before we get to the break, and maybe we continue it after the break. The one thing I want to know.
Mm-hmm. They play today, by the way, at 4 o'clock. It'll be right here on 95.7 The Game. The first preseason game in Hawaii, taking on
Honolulu,
the Clippers.
Honolulu, Hawaii.
I think they're... Well, I don't know where they're playing, but their camp has been in the North Shore.
Really?
Yeah.
North Shore?
Yeah, because it's more secluded.
But where the hell are they in the... Is there a gym in the North Shore?
I don't know. Oh, they're Hawaii BYU.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that is on the other side. I wouldn't call that North Shore. Yeah, all right.
What's on the north side, right? Well, I don't know where BYU is, but they're staying.
Okay.
From my
yeah
knowledge on the north side.
Got it. All right. You know
Turtle Cove,
Neil Everett.
Yeah, he actually went to my university for 2 years before transferring to Oregon. Played soccer at Willamette and then decided to kick rocks.
He used to do sports in Hawaii. It's where he started.
How's it,
Bada? So he did sports in Hawaii, right? That's where the how's it comes from.
Yeah.
And he was also the sports information director for BYU UH.
Really?
Yes. And he did weekends. I remember he was so out on, and he was a guy that used to have a cocktail under his desk at KGMB, the CBS affiliate in Honolulu, Hawaii. Let's turn things over to our weatherman. What's it going to be like today? Well, much like that of the last 364 days of the year, it's going to be 85 and partly cloudy. Back to you.
25% chance of rain.
All right.
Depending on the side of the island. You ever thought about doing television in Hawaii?
Well, I had an opportunity, yes. I mean, I actually started out there. So I did play-by-play after college for Chaminade University.
You did play-by-play for Chaminade?
Oh, yeah. Here come the Silver
Swords. You call the upset over Virginia?
No, come on, man.
No, I know you're not that old.
No, but I did. And then on the weekends, I did with KGMB. I was the weekend. That's where I first got my feet wet before I went to Fresno, actually. Mm. So I didn't. Fresno was my first legitimate where I was the number one, but it started out in Hawaii right after college. And the problem with Hawaii is that you just don't have any professional teams. And so, you know, it's
just the Bows.
It's all about the Bows. So you don't, you know, you miss the opportunity. It's the University of Hawaii football team, which is never good. Which, by the way, they're probably tailgating as we speak. Nobody tailgates earlier than the University of Hawaii because they're so into food. And a lot of them, once the food's over, they leave. They don't go to the game.
I was going to say, when I woke up this morning, it was literally 1 a.m. in Hawaii. You got to backtrack. As far as tailgates go, there are some incredible ones across the country. The best, I would say the most devoted tailgate that I've been to was actually North Dakota State in Fargo.
Bison's?
The Bison, yeah, because it's negative 15.
Oh, that's nuts.
And people are still out there boozing and just getting after it. They have all these party buses, and they're basically adjacent to each other or connected because you don't want to go outside for too long because you're going to freeze your you-know-whats off. And so you just kind of hop between these buses that are all warm and lit. And they have these bars that they make inside these basically makeshift school buses. It's a beautiful scene before you all go into the Fargo Dome and watch North Dakota State, who's a perennial powerhouse, just kick the crap out of whatever FCS team.
Well, and so I'm assuming it's good comfort food, obviously. That's the thing about Hawaii. My cousins
A lot of carbs.
My cousins would always say, hey, listen, this Hawaii, none of that cheese and cracker over here. Like they eat, like they got a pig on a spigot. They're just like, it's real. Like you sit down and you eat, and then you eat some more. You talk story, listen to a little music, and then you eat some more. Talk a little more story, and this goes on for like 6 hours.
Is that your pigeon?
That's it, brother. Brada.
Speaking of the Warriors, sorry to side.
Oh, yeah. That's the.
Sorry.
You know
that.
What I want to know from you? I want to continue the conversation.
Okay.
Here's the question of the day. Who's their starting five?
Question of the day, question of the year. I think, last year it was close to 30 starting lineups. I think we might see something similar to this year. I don't know who their starting I have an idea of who their starting lineup is going
to
be.
Give me one.
Well, no. I just find it funny because after practice yesterday, I think it was Curry, Pajemski, Heald, Draymond, Trace Jackson, Davis that did kind of like a post-camp scrimmage or practice, right? And so one of the questions to Kerr was, is that what your starting five is going to be? And he goes, the only thing I can tell you is that that absolutely will not be my starting five. So I don't know who it's going to be. If I had to guess, my five would be Curry. I think Kerr's going to start Pajemski, whether it's the right decision or not. I think he's going to start Wiggins, Draymond, Trace Jackson Davis. No Kuminga in the starting lineup. I think that's who's going to be the opening night starting five.
Yeah, I'm with you. Although, De'Anthony Melton is going to give, I think, Pajemski a run.
I think Melton will close. But I think I think they might have a starting lineup that has two, and on some nights, three guys that do not close, which is kind of strange.
I think Podziemski coming off the bench makes sense in a lot of ways. Because he's sort of that old soul that we always detail, and he's sort of a calming influence. He's not Chris Paul, but he has, like, he can come into the game, and he's like, you feel as though he knows, you know.
He's a connector.
He can balance the floor. Yeah, he can connect people, but I think he's effective if he's your sixth, or if he's the guy that's replacing Steph, those Steph minutes. I'd feel comfortable with that.
I think we also learned this summer that the Warriors are a not statistically driven team, but they do lean on metrics. And the best two-man combination for them last season was Curry and Podziemski. So whether it's as a starter or a bench player, you know, I do think we're going to see a lot of those two because that's who Kerr believes plays the best together. And whoever plays the best alongside Steph is going to play. Like, I think Kerr hinted at this. Right now, there might be four starting spots open. Because Draymond, I think what they're going to try and do this year to keep him fresher is keep his minute total around 28 to 30 per game. I think we're going to see a lot of Kyle Anderson this year at the four, whether it's off the bench or starting on some nights. But
I'm glad that you have Trayce Jackson-Davis at that five spot. He has got to start.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't have to start.
Oh, he has to.
Well, by process of elimination, they don't have anybody above 6 feet, 8 inches outside of him and Looney. Who, by the way, Looney's looking like a small four. You see him knock down a couple threes in practice?
Oh, no.
Dude, that form is looking...
Oh, no.
He's looking like the player that was compared to Kevin Durant coming out of high school.
Oh, speaking of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, I don't know. He's lost a lot of weight, apparently. You know, speaking of threes...
I also don't necessarily... If he's playing center, why is he losing weight?
Here's the thing.
He's already undersized.
Is that, you're speaking of threes, Jonathan Kuminga has got to take a step in that direction. Like, to me, that's whether he can play the three or the four, I know that's a big discussion. He's most effective at the three. And if you're going to play the three, which is why I think Kerr is hesitant to put him there, it's because you got to shoot the three. It's got to be in your bag. Like, in today's NBA, you've got to be able to shoot a three if you want to play at the three spot, which I know he's more comfortable there.
Well, he also has to be able to move the ball if he's playing alongside Wiggins, because both of them are pretty ball dominant. I don't know. The thing that I find fascinating, I'll tell you on the other side, because there's something that Kerr's talked about in training camp and that dates back to the end of last year, which I find really interesting. I don't know if it's good or bad necessarily, but I want to pick your brain about it.
All right. We'll do that and much more, and we continue after this.